court appointed is meant to be for entertainment purposes and basic legal information only.
Nothing in this podcast should be considered as legal representation nor legal advice.
Only use the knowledge presented herein to dazzle your friends or possibly win bar trivia. Perspective on legal frivolity. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am just a dude.
Well, Tommy, looks like your better half is sitting right next to you.
Yes, it's the half that brings up our average.
Hey, Mary, how are you doing today?
I'm good. Thanks for having me, guys. This is going to be fun.
It's our special guest star, Mary Smurl. We've had Sydney, we've had Taylor, we've had Riley. And now we've got Mary, completes the fourfecta.
The fourfecta? Yeah. We had a Justin on here, too, one time.
Yeah, we had Justin on here. Well, he wasn't one of my ladies.
No, he was not.
He will be relieved to hear that he is not one of your ladies.
Well, we want to bring Mary on today because today we're going to be talking out parental liability for hosting parties. And as someone who has had parties at Mary and Tommy's house before when I was younger, thought it'd be good to get some insight to have an extra person in here to talk about this.
Well, everybody knows the mother is more involved in these things than the father, or at least at our house it is, so I could have talked from my standpoint, but Mary was much more deeply involved in these things.
Yeah, that's called keep the dad in the dark.
Yeah.
He never knows it's happening till it's happened.
Because I would say no, and she was the cool mom, see, to set these things up.
I was. What can I say? Still am.
Well, now, when I was in high school, I was lucky enough that you all would let me have parties at your house after, like, homecoming or prom or things like that. That was always a very nice thing.
Well, because our mom was a little bit on the strict side, and so there would be no...
Just a tad bit.
There would be bed check. Everyone would be in, doors locked. No shenanigans with Pat. No shenanigans.
And if you were a minute late, you'd find the door locked and she's peeking out at you and not letting you in. I remember that happening a few times when I brought you home.
She liked to watch as you would walk up to the door, and right as you'd put your hand on the knob, she'd lock it. Be like, you're late. Now what are you going to do? You got to knock and wake me up. And then you're in trouble for waking me up.
Didn't you all have a key?
No. At 5834, I never had a key. Was there a key?
Yeah, I had a key. I had a key growing up.
Wait a minute.
You were an only child, though.
Wait a minute.
The other six were out of the house, so you got to be like an only child. That's what Riley's living right now. Riley's living as an only child.
I'm just going to say, there was never a key at 5834 my entire life, and I think everybody would agree.
It was on the keychain with my car key, my own personal car that I had exclusive use to.
You got a car?
Of course he had a car. He had his own room.
Well, now, to be fair, Mary, you had a car, and about a week after you had it, you drove it into a tree, so...
Well, it wasn't really my car. It was Mom and Dad's new car. That's a whole other story. It's not even go there.
Well, there's some more parental liability for you. Wrecking the parents' car.
Yeah. Yeah. Being where you're not supposed to be. Uh-oh. Having somebody in the car that's not supposed to be there. Skipping school. Yep.
Well, we can talk about the liability for wrecking your parents' car at some point, too. But the main thing that I wanted to talk about was about, like, hosting parties and things like that. Because it's homecoming season. Kids are having parties and whatnot. And hopefully not doing bad things, making good life choices.
I don't think that's possible. Teenage plus plus life does not equal good life choices.
You know where it all fell apart? I got to say this. When I was growing up and when I was 18, the law was you can drink when you're 18, you know? And so I think it's really hard for parents. It has been for me to say to my daughter, I mean, don't you agree, Tommy? To our girls, you know, we could drink when we were 18, but you can't till you're 21. You can serve your country. You can do that, but you can't have a drink. I don't understand it. I do not support that. I think that, you know, the drinking law was 18. I don't think that statistics show that anything has really gotten any better now that we just have kids getting more creative at hiding it. Quite frankly.
Yeah.
You know, so that's the big problem right there is that I don't have a problem with, I think that if kids are allowed to experiment in a safe place, then it's better than if you say, no, you can never do this, and then they're going to find a way to do it. So why not at least frame it, you know, so you can make sure they're okay.
Well, especially in those years at college. I mean, you're 18, you're going to college, so there's 3 years of your college career that you're technically not allowed to drink.
Yeah.
And, I mean, you're on your own.
Technically not allowed to drink.
Technically. Well, technically you're not, but, I mean, I don't know. I think if you're away and you're on your own, those are decisions that you have to learn how to make. And right, wrong, or indifferent, you're going to learn the hard way or whatever. But I just can't imagine going to college and not being able to drink to get through it. That's about the only way that I had to survive.
That doesn't help the argument at all.
That's my argument.
I mean, I couldn't drink when I was in college because it was 21 when I was going to college. And, I just fortunately had friends that purchased it for me. Or I had a fake ID that I could buy it with, you know, one of the two.
So, yeah, and you didn't wait till college either, really, when you think about it.
No, well, there was some dabbling in high school.
There was some dabbling.
Yeah.
No dabbing, but dabbling.
No, we didn't have dabbing back then.
I can claim a couple of assists on those dabbles, I'm just going to say.
Well, whenever you provide alcohol to somebody, and this is mainly in a commercial setting, and we've talked about this on the podcast before, not necessarily for a house party, but I felt it'd be kind of a good idea to talk about it and differentiate between it. States have what's called dram shop acts, and this is a law, and 38 states actually have it, and it makes a business which sells alcoholic drinks or a host who serves liquor to a drinker who is obviously intoxicated or close to it, they're held strictly liable to anyone injured by the drunken patron or guest. Now, the important thing about this is it imposes strict liability. And that's basically an imposition of liability without finding of any fault. So even if there was no fault whatsoever, if you supplied that person the alcohol and got them drunk, then you're going to be liable for it. And you'll be held strictly liable for it without even having a showing of any kind of negligence. So that'd be pretty serious if that happened in residential things as well. So,
but you're talking about adults, legal age drinking in a bar, right? Or in a
that's true.
Situation
but I mean,
like
it could
that.
Be also for somebody underage as well.
Okay.
So, I mean, Dram Shop Act would apply for underage people as well. So,
Now most of those laws are outlined that say you can't serve someone who is visibly intoxicated.
Correct.
It doesn't say you can't serve them alcohol. So, in other words, if you gave somebody that did not appear to be had not been drinking, and as far as you knew, it was their first or second drink they'd had, and then went out and got something. Got into something,
right?
Then you're not necessarily responsible for that.
No, I mean if you serve them while they are noticeably intoxicated, that's generally how these dram shop acts work,
right?
Or if there's somebody who is a known alcoholic and you serve them drinks, some of them actually
they're this town drunk like Otis from Mayberry.
Well, no.
And you can't give Otis a drink. Everybody knows he's a drunk.
But if they're continually coming into your bar or restaurant and getting plowed every night, and you keep serving them, then you know. Some of these laws are written that way. So.
And they leave your place and they go down to the jail and put themselves in jail.
Yep. Hey, Andy, how you doing?
Checking in again, Otis.
So we talked about Dram Shop Act a little bit when Taylor was on the show back in our Christmas Spirits episode. And like I said, this only applies when basically alcohol is sold for profit. So for residential house parties, the Dram Shop Act would not really apply. Now, one interesting thing could be is that if you are of the college age and you're hosting like a keg party and you charge $5 for a beautiful red solo cup. I mean, would a Dram Shop Act apply then? Because, I mean, you're selling it, so.
I would say so.
It could. So
just for the cup, right? Not for a cup of.
That's your cover charge for the entertainment.
Here's your cup. I don't know what you're going to do with it, but you can wear it on your head. You can carry it around empty, whatever you want to do.
Could the argument be made that, hey, we sell these cups for five. They're
autographed.
They're commemorative cups. They have our fraternity logo on them, and we sell them, and people come in, and they have sodas and popcorn, and we have a great grand time. But we sell the cup for $5. What they do with the cup, it's not your fault, right? You're not selling a cup of beverage, beer, alcohol. You're selling a cup.
Well,
is that a way around it?
Probably not. No.
Oh, okay.
It's creative, and I appreciate that, but I don't think that would probably fly.
Well,
some of these creative ideas to get around things don't necessarily always work, but you never
you gotta
know.
Try. You got to try.
Yeah.
You never know.
Actually, in some ways, you're better off to sell them the drinks, because if you sold them the drinks, but you didn't sell them drinks after they were inebriated, then you might relieve yourself of responsibility as opposed to hosting it and giving it out for free.
Yeah. kind of lost me there when you said relieve yourself.
I didn't mean relieve yourself of the beverage you've been drinking. I meant relieve yourself of responsibility in a strictly non-urinating way.
Well, now, house parties, like I said, are considered differently. That you're a social host in that instance, so it's kind of a different designation. So say basically you're having a party for your kid's graduation, and you got everything you need there. You got your food, your drinks, entertainment. And you also got a couple cases of beer for the adults who are going to be coming to the party. So you specifically tell the kids, hey, do not drink this beer. There's not a wink, wink, or a nudge, nudge. You actually say, do not drink this beer. You mean it. And you've had parties before, and they've never drank before at your house or anything like that. And then some of these kids, since it's their graduation, they smuggle some of this beer into the basement and get drunk. And then one of them leaves the party, gets an accident, and has a wreck. So in that situation, do you think that the person who has the house party would be liable?
No.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
No, how can
Can this continue?
Okay, so here's what...
We need a ruling, counselor.
Wait a minute, though. Here's what it comes down to. Think about it, because I have really been giving this a lot of thought lately, seeing as that it's Riley's senior year, and this seems to be an ongoing situation. Actually, it started with your senior year, Michael, and it has continued on to now.
And
with
Sydney's 18th birthday keg party was the topper on the mistakes of all time.
Yeah, but that's what I would like to do, is because I feel that I have very specific situations that I have set up for everyone to be safe and everyone to be okay, and like you know, like party for you, you know, and we made sure that the parents all knew about it. The parents knew you guys were going to have a couple of six packs. You were seniors in high school. You checked your keys. A
couple of six packs?
Yeah.
We had a keg.
Each.
No. Not that one night. Not that New Year's. Did you have a keg that New Year's?
Yes.
No, not just the five of you or six of you.
Yes.
That one New Year's?
Yeah.
Where was it? Downstairs at our house?
I think so, yeah.
No, there wasn't. Was there a keg there then?
I don't know. I got beat up that night. I don't remember much about it.
No, but I mean, so all parents. So I literally spoke with each parent, and I did, because mom couldn't know about it because it wasn't okay. But, and you were allowed to drink. You handed over your car keys. No one left the house, and everyone was going to be safe. And I checked on you guys, and everything was fine. So in my opinion, I was acting within the law. Now, I know that you were underage. I get that. I'm not paying attention to that law because I don't agree with it. But I'm saying that basically, I think that there, in that situation, I've covered all my bases. So, you know, if something bad happens.
And that's where we run into the problem, is that as a parent, and you recognize teenagers are going to do what teenagers are going to do. So your best bet is to be realistic about it. And not live in this dream world that if I tell them they can't drink because they'll get in trouble, that they won't. So I try to create a safe situation where they drink. And you know what? It doesn't relieve you of the liability. It's wrong. There's no way that you can do it and be right.
But let me ask you all a question. Now, circle back to the instance I gave you. If you have a party where you're actually not supplying the alcohol to them,
right?
But they surreptitiously take this beer somewhere and drink it.
Yes. No was my response. No, I am not liable.
You don't think so?
Nope. You said
yes.
And
I say yes.
Well, the deal is that the fact that the person is a minor could be relevant. Now, all these things are going to differ by state. So some states actually impose liability only when social hosts actually provide the alcohol to the minors. So in some instances, Mary, you'd be right. If you didn't actually provide it to them physically, then you might not be liable. Now, other states would impose liability if you knew or should have known that the person you provided the alcohol to was already intoxicated and later be driving a car. So that would be a different situation where basically you again provided it to them. And then other states actually would impose liability for the fact that you had it at your house and you were the one who had command and control of that intoxicating beverage. And basically you would be the best person to make sure they didn't have it. So and the reasoning behind that, like I said, is that essentially it's your house. You had the alcohol there. Who else is in better position to make sure it doesn't get into the hand of minors than you? And that's where the liability kind of stems from. So to answer the question, you're both right.
So, well, there you go.
No, but wait a minute. So
there are no wrong answers here. Let the beer flow.
So what you're saying is that would come out. Whether
it depends
it was wrong
on where you're at.
Exactly. The circumstances would come out. So basically, like, I mean, I was thinking about the concert that, you know, Steph had, and everybody was there, and we're watching the live music and stuff like that. And there was alcohol for the adults.
Yeah.
There were some teenagers there. And I, as an adult, literally didn't even, it didn't enter my mind that these teenagers might sneak alcohol. I mean, you know what I mean? Yeah. I wasn't watching. I don't think anybody was really like, we got to watch those teenagers. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's a situation where then if one of them happened to just go in, grab a bottle, go to the bathroom, guzzle it down, you know, say vodka, whatever, and nobody knew about it, throw away the evidence and go out, I would think that that would have to come out in a in an investigation or a hearing or something, that these people had no idea. They cannot be held liable.
Well, and it just depends on a state-by-state thing, because under a general theory of negligence, you have to have a duty, you have to breach that duty, and then...
Duty.
Yep, there it goes.
Breach the duty.
Oh, no.
But basically, how would you be negligent in that situation if there was nothing really you could have done? I mean, you could have put a lock on your liquor cabinet, maybe.
Right.
But other than that, you know, what would you actually, how would you be negligent for it?
But would that be enough right there? You didn't have a lock on your liquor cabinet.
It depends.
We had bottles sitting out on a table under a tent.
Yeah.
So people could make cocktails. I mean, you know, it seems like...
Now, I mean, it probably would be a kind of case-by-case basis if you have all the liquor sitting out in the main party area and everybody's there, and so there's actually, you're kind of watching it, then I think, and they still somehow sneak past you and get it, you're probably less liable, whereas if you stick it, like, in a table right outside their bedroom door and nobody's ever in that little area, and then you go outside, but everybody has to come inside to make their drink, then you're not actually kind of watching it, so I could see where maybe... You can make an argument that you were negligent by doing it that way.
Right.
So
now the reason I answered that you were responsible is I read a story about a father in New York who his 17-year-old son wanted to have a party on the Friday after Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm.
He said, okay, you can have one, but there's no drinking. I'm not going to tolerate any drinking in this house. Son said, okay, and he had his friends over. Well, the father went down twice during the party to check to make sure no one was drinking and saw no signs of it. But somebody, kind of like that case with Riley, somebody called the police and said, here's this house, and they're having underage drinking going on there. And the police showed up, they went down and found people were drinking, and they arrested the dad.
Yeah. Well, and that's a difference, too. That's a criminal-type situation versus a civil thing. We're talking basically so far in a civil context. Now, there are some criminal things as well, and I was going to talk about the differences between those here in a minute. But before that, I think there might be some motions before the court today.
Well, yes, your kind honorship, sir. We need to approach the bench to pay court costs.
All right. Who do we have on the docket today, Tommy?
Well, amazingly enough, we have a cluster of clients.
A cluster of clients?
A cluster of clients, I claim.
A gaggle or a Google?
A peck.
A peck.
We have a peck of them. They're in pecking order. Our first pecking order customer is DollarShaveClub.com.
By now, everyone knows that Dollar Shave Club ships amazing razors for a few bucks. We've been members for a while, and we love the shave it gives us.
Everybody knows that we're Dollar Shave Club fans. We rave about their product. What you might not know, I mean, I didn't, is that Dollar Shave Club also has products for pretty much everything else I need in the bathroom. Body wash, shampoo, hair gel, lip balm, everything. As soon as I heard Dollar Shave Club had stuff other than razors, I was sold.
So when you go to the store, there's just way too many options. You can't tell the difference between any of them. So basically, what Dollar Shave Club does is they ship you exactly what you need when you need it.
They make it easy and convenient for you to upgrade your shave and your bathroom. Now you don't have to step foot in the store for these products. Just like the razors, everything is super high quality and left me looking and feeling amazing. Isn't that right, honey?
It is. It is. And can I just say this? That butter, oh my God, it is so good. That shave butter.
Oh yeah.
Good stuff. I use it. I'm a big fan of the Dollar Shave Club. Now, Riley and I both are.
Only thing I advise, don't use it on toast. It's not that good on toast.
And you know what? Even though I've kind of grown my winter beard out, so I don't shave like my whole face, the shave butter is great because it goes on clear, so that way whenever I am shaving and trimming up my beard, I don't make a mistake and actually shave off part of my beard.
Ah.
So it's really nice for that.
Yeah, that would make your face look uneven.
Yeah, that's actually pretty good when you think about it.
Now, if you're like me and you're sick of the nonsense at the store, now's the time to try out Dollar Shave Club for a limited time. Dollar Shave Club is basically giving away their starter set to new members. For only $5, the starter set features their executive razor and 3 trial size versions of their most popular product that will help you stay fresh and clean.
In the first box, you get the aforementioned shave butter, you get body wash, and one wipe Charlie's butt wipes. I just like saying that.
Charlie loves those, by the way.
You also get the executive razor, like Tommy said. It's got a premium weighty handle, and you get a full cassette of cartridges. After the first box, the replacement cartridges are sent to you for only a few bucks a month.
This offer is exclusively available at dollarshaveclub.com/court. That's dollarshaveclub.com/court.
And this is my favorite ad copy of all time. Dollar Shave Club's high-quality products will have you covered from face cheeks to butt cheeks. There's no better time than to try the club.
So try it, like we said, at dollarshaveclub.com/court. Tell them Mike and Tommy sent you. And Mary had a word in it.
Seriously, it's not just for guys out there. I'm telling you, you shave your legs with that shaving butter and that executive razor, and you can go one or two extra days. It's good stuff. Seriously.
There you have it, ladies.
Fact.
All right.
So who do we have up next?
Next on our docket is Cameron Hughes Wines.
Mm.
And this is part of the reason why we brought Mary on as well.
Yes. Now, Cameron, we actually got on a conference call to talk to them to get ready for this. And Cameron himself was on the call, which I was not expecting. I was blown away.
He's a great guy.
He took time out of his busy day to tell us about their wine. And it was very interesting to find out that they buy ultra premium wine in bulk and relabel it themselves. The wine that you're buying from them would actually be like $60, $70, maybe even $90 a bottle wine. And they're reselling it at very affordable prices for us, you know, middle-class individuals.
That's right. If you want to drink wine like a millionaire, but you don't want to pay huge amounts for that Napa Cabernet, then that's when you want to try Cameron Hughes Wine.
Their formula for success is that in the wine industry, the wine will actually change hands up to four times, each person adding their own markup. So the bottle may have originally started at $1.13 a bottle, but by the time it gets to you, it's $15, $16 a bottle.
And a lot of that has to do with what's left over from Prohibition and things like that and some of these really strange laws, which we probably are going to do an episode about at some point. There's really strange laws with regard to regulating alcohol sales in America.
But the true test of this wine is the wine taste itself.
That's right.
So, Michael, you sampled yours. Now, me not being a wine drinker much, I assembled my own panel of professional drinkers. And that's where Mary comes in. With your girlfriend, Stephanie, and their friend, Melissa, I had these three professional wine drinkers taste the wine for me. And she's here to vouch for how good it was.
That's right. And I tasted through myself because I do enjoy wine myself, so...
Now, what did you find when you were, I was curious, because you tasted a lot of the different bottles, yes? No?
Oh, yeah, I tasted through all of them.
Okay.
Every single one was really good.
Forced yourself, huh?
Yeah, it was tough work. I tasted through all of them, and I really enjoyed them all. Each one I had, I like white and reds, and I would say each one I had, I liked them all. They all had just delicious taste. The Pinot Noir was really good. There was a Cabernet in there that was really good. And there was also a Albarino, I think it was from Spain, that was delicious as well, white. So, I tasted them all, and Cameron Hughes puts out some good quality wine. I can say that firsthand.
Yeah, I would have to agree with you, Michael. So we had our wine tasting, and we had our cheese and our fruit. We had our bottles assembled, and it was really funny because we'd had one bottle that I had opened previously that had a little bit, it wasn't one of the Cameron Hughes bottles, but of another brand. Mm-hmm. And so I think Stephanie and I were going to, split that, just have a little bit of that before we got into it. We drank a little bit of that, and then we opened one of the bottles, and Melissa did the same. Melissa was drinking the white. I think she was drinking that one that you mentioned, the one that has the fruity.
The Albarino.
Yeah, she loved them. She really liked that. Yeah. She really likes New Zealand, that fruity kind of grapefruit. Yeah, mm-hmm. That. She literally was like, okay, this is my bottle. I'm drinking this. Stephanie and I finished the Cab. Which one? It was the gold. No, it was the Burgundy. It was the red label. Mm-hmm. There was a red label. So that one might have even had some Merlot. I'm not sure. Maybe it was a blend. So there was that one.
Yeah, there's a red blend that was really good.
That was amazing. The tannins, because that is what I'm always looking for, is like nice, subtle tannins and that very round. It was such a surprise because I'm sitting here thinking, it'll be okay, but wow, it was amazing. And then the gold label, the cab that I had, I think maybe day before yesterday, because you all had already tried it.
Mm-hmm.
Holy moly, it was great too. I mean, yeah. I was blown away at how good this wine is. I mean, and it is like looking up the details and the descriptions and everything. Right on the money.
Yeah.
Right on the money.
I mean, they're luxury wines at affordable prices.
Absolutely. I'm sold.
The thing, too, is that if you actually didn't like a bottle, which I don't think you won't. I mean, I didn't. All the ones I tried, I liked them. But Cam actually guarantees those wines. So if you don't like them, he'll buy right back from you because he stands behind his product. So, I mean, he's very passionate about it, and we got to talk to him on the phone. So,
well, I don't think that'll be a problem based on my tasting panel, because when they all came to the next morning, they raved about one of the bottles and said it was the best wine they had.
I'm going to get this. I'm going to sign up. I'm like, no more going to the store for me and buying it. I'm going to sign up for this. It was really good, and I am totally sold. Yeah.
Well, right now, the offer to you is for if you order 3 or more bottles, you get free shipping and a corkscrew to go along with it, because they want to make sure that you can get right into that bottle.
That's right. And free shipping is a huge saving if you think about it, because to ship wine is very heavy and can be expensive to ship. So this is a great offer to try some great wine.
And you won't be disappointed if you're a wine drinker or a wine lover. These are something you need to try out.
Yeah.
So to try it out, go to chwine.com. That's chwine.com. And use the code CORT right now. That's chwine.com and enter the code CORT. You will not be sorry.
And have a wine tasting and let the boys know how much you loved it. It'll be fun.
All right. Last one up, Your Honorship. Sleep Number Mattresses.
That's a new sponsor for the podcast.
Absolutely. First Cameron News and now Sleep Number. We love new sponsors.
Yes, we do. It's fall. Life is more hectic than ever. You got a lot of things going on. And that's why you need to get your best quality sleep.
And Sleep Number is known for their adjustability and affordability in price. To be your best during the day, you can't afford a mediocre night's sleep. You can afford a Sleep Number bed.
The Sleep Number bed lets you choose your ideal comfort and support on each side. It's the perfect bed for couples.
The newest beds are so smart, they actually sense your every move and automatically adjust, so you stay sleeping comfortably throughout the night. Who would have thought of something like that?
And this is really good for you, Tommy. They even have an adjustment for snoring.
My bed doesn't do that, so that's pretty good. Now, my CPAP mask does help cover up my snoring. Otherwise, we would have a problem. I wouldn't sleep.
I think I probably might need an adjustment or some sort of a setting for snoring, because I'm a bit of a snorer sometimes.
Well, you might better get checked for sleep apnea, but this bed could solve it for you.
There you go. So Sleep Number beds cost about the same as a traditional mattress, last twice as long, and 91% of owners recommend it. Best of all, right now, queen mattresses start at only $699.99.
You'll only find Sleep Number at any of the 550 Sleep Number stores nationwide. Visit sleepnumber.com to find the store near you, and be sure to tell them that Court Appointed sent you.
And make sure you get some good rest.
At Sleep Number.
So, you mentioned this story about this father in New York who had some criminal liability for some underage kids drinking in his house.
After he strictly forbid it and had even claimed to check twice and didn't see any kind of drinking going on, even though the cops apparently found it.
What we talked about before were the civil issues. Now, criminally, the consequences are much more severe for actually furnishing the alcohol to minors. It's usually a misdemeanor, which basically means it's imprisonment for less than a year in a local jail and a fine. And that's usually for a charge considered contributing to the delinquency of a minor or something along those lines. Now, that's one of the differences, too, is between a misdemeanor and a felony. A misdemeanor is generally punishable by 12 months in jail or less, whereas a felony is 12 months or more. So that's one difference right there. Mm-hmm. So as far as the whole criminal scale of these type things, you know, furnishing it to a minor would be on the smaller scale, but still a crime nonetheless.
How many misdemeanors does it take to equal a felony? Is that like 4 houses equal a hotel?
No, you don't get to trade up.
Oh, okay.
And evidently you can probably get a lot of misdemeanors and not get traded up. I mean, just ask Missy Misdemeanor Elliot.
I was going to say, isn't that a rapper?
It is. So, but no, and there's not any kind of thing like at the fair or the carnival.
You can't trade two small ones for
one big one.
Or something.
One big one.
doesn't work that way.
Okay.
Now, one thing I always think about whenever I hear stories about teens having parties at houses, did you ever hear the story about the Australian kid, Corey Worthington, who had a huge party at his parents' house? It was back in 2008.
No, I saw that. Remember Project X?
Yeah, well, that was loosely based on his on his exploits.
That almost happened at our house. Yeah. That was Sydney's kegger on her 18th birthday. That's about what that was, Project X.
Well, this guy, he wrote on his MySpace to tell you when it took place. He goes, "Parents away, tell your mates you don't want to miss it. It's going to be huge." And it turned into a rampage. There were more than 500 guests, police officers, a helicopter, and a canine unit had to be called for this big party that he had. So,
well, that sounds like us. Here we were. We told Sydney, yes, you can have, we'll have a keg party. You can invite over about 10 of your...
She was 18.
10 yeah. of your girlfriends, and they can each have somebody with them, and we'll have this nice little 18th birthday party for
and
you.
And check your keys at the door. All parents knew. Mm-hmm. All parents of the kids invited knew.
No. So there were way more kids than there were parents.
Where did it start going wrong?
They just started showing up in boatloads. The street was blocked off. And we're sitting there in the living room with a less than 1-year-old Riley yes. in our arms.
Yes.
And people are walking through our living room that we don't know. The porch is full. Every room in the house is full.
That was the thing. To get some fresh air, I went to open the sliding glass doors, which were off the living room and dining room, to just go out and get a breath of fresh air. Because we thought by this time we're locking the doors and nobody else is coming in. And as I open the sliding glass door,
the smell of marijuana comes wafting in the house.
That too. But there were like 70 some kids packed out on our little deck. They just heard about it. They couldn't get in. So they just parked themselves on our deck with their six packs.
On the side?
On the yeah. side deck. And I'm like... Well, why are you all here? I mean, at that point, it's like, what are you going to do? You know, they just heard that there was a party. So when they came,
the keg was floating halfway through the party. That's how many people showed up.
So did you take up a collection to go buy another one?
No, I did not. I said, that's a sign that the party's over. We need to leave now.
And the hardest part was getting the kids off the deck. Because here's the thing. They weren't really invited in. And we didn't feel, I mean, it was like we were half afraid. I mean, what kind of kid, what?
We were overwhelmed at that point. We felt like we were in the Alamo.
Just lock the doors, hunker down, everybody turn out the lights and hope they go away. Would we have been responsible if those kids who we did not invite, and we actually did say, everybody go home. We locked our doors, yet they stayed out on our side deck drinking beer, like for another hour.
We were appalled.
That's totally what I appalled.
Tell the authorities.
No, I was scared. I wasn't appalled.
I mean, yeah, you might have had some liability there if something bad had happened.
What about their parents? Where's the liability for the parent who has the kid who goes out and secures alcohol from somebody? You know, I mean, isn't there a responsibility on the parents of the kids who bring it?
We had secured the keg. That was the basis of the problem.
I get that. No, yeah. I know my liability, but yeah. I'm asking actually a legal question. What? Is the
we
responsibility.
Had the party was the impetus for their downfall.
You know what I'm asking, Michael? The kids out on the deck, mm-hmm. they got beer from somewhere. Right. I mean, what if you know, their brothers, older brothers, parents, isn't there a responsibility on the parents of the kids who show up and bring their own booze?
Yeah, but you provided the location for them to do it. And I would say that basically by having a keg party there for underage kids and the fact that other kids showed up with beer and drank on your property, it's probably doesn't matter whether or not you supplied the beer to them or not. You provided the environment. And I think that would probably be some sort of culpability for that as well.
But short of frisking kids when they walk in your house. So if you say, no alcohol, not providing it, not having it here, and you're in and out and everyone seems to be fine and you do not see any alcohol whatsoever, next day you find evidence they were drinking. Nobody had any problems from it. So, I mean, my point is
depending on circumstances, you may still be responsible.
Now, here's the deal. You had that party, and then you discovered that there was drinking going on.
Right.
So, I think any subsequent party you have, you would have to be a bit more aware of it, a bit more cognizant of that they did this prior, and then have to take more affirmative steps.
Pat them down at the door.
Maybe. No.
Body search.
Well, there's more chance of you being held liable for it the second time it happens than maybe
the
first
time.
Saying.
Yeah, because you're actually put on notice at this point that, hey, that took place before.
Yeah.
So now, maybe, you know, you got to sit outside with them. Or you invite over Uncle Michael. And Uncle Michael sits there.
He drinks with them.
Yeah. Uncle Michael would not be drinking with them.
Hey, bring that beer over here. Let me taste that. See if that's all right. See if that's a good one.
Uncle Michael would be practicing his jiu-jitsu and judo throws, tossing kids over the fence.
Okay, well, maybe that's what we need to do then. We just need to be more careful. We need a bouncer.
We need a bouncer.
All right, can I ask you one other question?
You need to be a good bouncer?
Yeah.
Joseph.
Yeah, that's true. He's like, pick him up and throw him. Like,
yeah.
One fell swoop, boom, right over.
Now, there was actually, I had a case a few years ago where a parent had a party, and there was a fight that took place at the party. And I sued the property owner for the damage that my client had received at the party. He had he got punched in the face, and it shattered his eye and all, it was like his orbital bone and all this stuff. And he had homeowner's insurance, and we ended up actually settling with the homeowner's insurance policy. And the theory that I put forward for this negligence was he had all these kids over to his house, but he didn't supervise them. So that was actually a theory of negligence against him. So
because he didn't supervise.
Yeah. And there's actually a negligence theory for bars as well, basically, because, you know, people are at bars, they're drinking, and there's fights at bars sometimes. And bar owners have to have some sort of security in place to make sure that nothing bad happens, that basically patrons are safe. So if there's a bar and they don't have any kind of security or anything like that, and there's a big fight that breaks out and somebody gets really hurt, then you can sue the bar on behalf of the person who got hurt because they didn't really take any affirmative steps to make sure it didn't happen.
Well, let me ask you this then. What if, say, for instance, there was like an event, like a ball or a gala or some sort of event,
mm-hmm.
and it's part, you know, with part of your ticket price, you have drinks and appetizers, whatever. Mm-hmm. And what if somebody like drinks so much that they like were to fall on the dance floor and like break their arm? You know, something like they're so drunk that they fall in their drunkenness while they're dancing, mm-hmm. and they break their arm. Is the event, you know what I mean? Are they responsible?
Yeah, they could be. I mean, questions I would ask if I was that person's attorney, I would say, well, so basically you had just open bar. Anybody could drink whatever they wanted. Was there any limits in place? You know, did you have tickets?
Were the servers instructed to not serve obviously intoxicated people?
Yeah. So, you know, what checks and balances did you have in place to make sure that this didn't happen?
Yeah, I mean, think about that, because that could get into really, I mean, because when people, you know, have too much to drink and there's music and there's dancing and stuff. And I mean,
that's
people,
a little different too, at like an event like that, a charity event,
yeah.
or something. And,
yeah.
and so you buy your ticket and you don't want to be disrespectful to people that are there that have bought tickets to your event. Say, oh, you're too drunk. I'm not going to give you a drink.
Yeah.
You know, that puts you in a tough situation.
Or even if somebody does something to embarrass themselves and there's video of it and it goes out on Facebook and that person's humiliated, does that person have a right to say, hey, event planner, you should have looked out for me. I mean, that, you think about that, that could get really crazy.
Mm, see, that instance, I don't think the video thing, because basically that falls under the doctrine of you smelt it, you dealt it, mm-hmm. or you dealt it, you smell it, or something along those lines.
What does that even mean?
I don't know
what that means.
I don't know how that works, but
you smelt it, you dealt
okay.
it.
Okay.
You dealt it, you smelt it.
Well, no.
Well, if you wind up on Pornhub, it's your own fault.
No, but I mean,
it's not the person who had the party, that's not their fault. It's, you know,
if
the person who uploaded it to Pornhub, it would be their fault.
I guess my point is if you drink, if you are somewhere that you are allowed to drink so much, whether it's at a bar, whether it's in someone's house or whatever, and if it's almost like I don't have to be responsible for myself because I can drink as much as I want and it's your fault for letting me. That seems like that's
not necessarily the case.
Yeah.
Basically, the negligence part comes into play again. It's what kind of duty do you have to make sure these type of things don't happen?
Right.
Now, a person's own voluntary intoxication is certainly something that would come into play as well.
Mm-hmm.
And that would probably offset any kind of damage that they might be able to recover against that person.
Okay.
And there's theories for that as well, which reduce people's amount.
Yeah.
So it's called contributory negligence. So basically if you contribute to the negligence yourself, then that can bar some sort of recovery for you recovering for it too. So basically if somebody goes to a party and drinks so much themselves and then gets hammered and then tries to sue somebody for something that took place, they might have trouble doing that because their own actions actually led to it as well. But that's not to say there wouldn't be some liability for the person who had the party too.
Well, it's almost like a catch-22, because maybe this guy goes around to these parties and gets hammered all the time. So that means if he shows up to your party, you should know this guy has a reputation. So you should know to be on the alert, not to let him get hammered. And it's his mission to get hammered.
Hey, what about this? What about like a craft beer festival? Because
mm-hmm.
this just hit me. So you've got this craft beer festival and everybody is drinking and you know everybody is. They all got there in cars. and they've been drinking all day because, you know, that's what you do, go around and taste all mm-hmm. the different kind of beers. So you leave and you get in a car wreck with someone and someone is hurt. They sue the person who was driving under the influence. Obviously, that, I mean, that's a criminal thing. But then can the event sponsors be held responsible because they are unleashing a ton of drunk people?
You can drink anywhere. Well, it doesn't have to be a craft beer festival.
And also, you know, probably at the craft beer festival, and you see these places a lot of times, they'll have like a little poster to say, drive safe, call a ride. Here's a number for cabs. They'll be...
Or they even set up a service that they provide. I think that the one here in town actually provides a free service to take you home afterwards.
Yep. So they have things like that in place.
Yeah.
So if you don't take advantage of it, that's your own fault. But they're taking steps to try to mitigate any circumstances where that might happen.
And what about the police department? What about the police who know that these people... Is it not kind of incumbent on them to stand outside the gates and start
check everybody?
Checking everybody as they come through and anybody who seems like
they're... That kind of violates your, Fourth Amendment or something, doesn't it?
Well, I mean, they'd have to have some sort of reasonable suspicion to...
Right.
I mean...
You can't just check everybody. Otherwise, you just stand outside a bar.
Unless they have, like, a sobriety checkpoint, which the Supreme Court's held those are valid.
But you have to advertise them.
I mean, it depends state by state. But, I mean, they could say, we're going to set up a sobriety checkpoint at the end of 4th Avenue right there. So, basically, in funnel traffic, close all the roads so everybody that leaves has to come through there. And then, you know, that'd probably be a pretty good deterrent.
Well, what about this? Because I just have this one question that I have to ask, and then I won't ask anymore, I promise. When we had a party once for Riley, mm-hmm. and again, like Tommy said, there was no drinking. Some kid who wasn't invited to the party got upset and called the police and said, there's drinking. So the police showed up at our house, came into our house. Tommy and I were not there. We were at a play rehearsal. It was mm-hmm. early in the evening. It wasn't even late. They administered breathalyzers to all the minors in that house. They came in, like literally walked into our house. My daughter was Riley was too afraid to say, no, you can't come in there, please. Were they within their rights to do that? Should they have been able to come into our house and do that based on a phone call, an anonymous phone call?
Probably not.
Okay.
They asked, though, and of course the kids answering the door let them in.
Yeah.
Okay. I was just curious. I've always
just like a vampire. If you invite a vampire in, that's your own fault.
Yeah.
You just don't invite them in.
They should have thrown holy water on them.
Or held up garlic or something. We had garlic powder in the spice cabinet.
Well, this is true. I was wondering about that because to me that seemed like that wasn't an okay thing that they did.
Hey, I did find some exceptions to underage drinking.
Oh, okay.
That although the minimum drinking age is officially 21 in all 50 states, 45 states legally exempt minors from underage drinking under certain circumstances. These exceptions include on private property, including homes and offices, with parental presence and consent in 29 states.
Really?
On private property, including homes and offices without parental presence and consent in 6 states. For religious purposes, 25 states. For medical purposes, 16 states. I can't think of a medical purpose where you got to drink. I got to have a beer.
This kid needs a silver bullet.
Hurry, stat.
For government work-related purposes, like working undercover, I'm glad they explained that. That's in 4 states. For educational purposes, such as culinary schools, 11 states. Mm. When reporting medical emergency, like, for example, when an underage drinker dials 911 for another minor, 17 states and Washington, D.C. So that's kind of like we have for the drug laws. If you report an overdose to save the person's life and it finds you have drugs, it kind of turn the other cheek because you saved that person's life.
Yeah.
And then on alcohol selling premises, such as restaurants and bars with parental presence and consent, 11 states. So if you're in a bar or a restaurant that sells drinks and your parents let you drink, you can drink in 11 states.
Well, that makes sense. That's kind of like a more European type approach to it.
Right. Now, there's 5 states that absolutely under no exceptions allow underage drinking. Alabama, Arkansas, Idaho, New Hampshire, and West by God, Virginia.
Hmm. Good for us. Well, I didn't realize there were some exceptions like that, though, in different states.
Yeah. Well, I knew that there was somewhere we were at, and they said, yeah, if your parents tell you, I can't remember where it was, or somewhere we were, and I said, yeah, if you're the parents and you're okay in it, then it's okay.
Was that?
I can't remember, but it wasn't that, I think it was Taylor was with us, and it wasn't that she wasn't old enough, because she was, it was just that she didn't have her ID with her.
Yeah.
But they said, well, if you're her parents, then it's okay.
That's right. I don't know where we were, but you're right. I remember that.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Well, that's some common sense.
It wasn't one of those 5 states, though, I'll tell you that.
Well, I think if you're going to have the bottom line is for these things, if you're going to have a party and you're going to have kids over, you know, kids might be drinking, so you got to keep a close eye on them. you want to be able to say, like, in certain circumstances, what you did to take make sure that there was no hanky-panky going on. I pat them down when they came in.
Yeah.
I pat them down when they left.
I would say you just about have to be out there in the party amongst them and monitoring it if you're going to be completely clear.
No backpacks. People walking in with backpacks, that's something to be suspicious of.
Yeah. What you got in your backpack there,
yeah,
buddy?
Mm-hmm. Or just my bathing suit and my towel.
Yeah, a little bit of grandpa's cough syrup in there.
Mm-hmm. A little bit of liquid courage.
So, yeah, I think you're probably right, though. If you really want to be completely safe, either don't let them have a party or make sure you're out there keeping a keeping an eye on them.
And if they messed you over once and they drank after you told them not to, that makes you that much more liable the next time if you do it again.
That's right. And even though I think I was lucky and got to have parties at your all's houses where I was able to drink with my friends in high school, I don't think I'd be letting anybody do that in this day and age.
No.
I think we're a more litigious society these days.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you're right. And Sydney's kegger ruined it for Taylor. Taylor never got anything like that because after that experience with Sydney's, we wouldn't do it again. Now, I think it must have waned some because Mary's kind of loosened up the reins there with Riley. But after this last one, I'm not willing to go along with anymore.
Taylor had no interest. Taylor had a couple of friends, and they would always hang out and stuff, but she was never interested. You know, so it wasn't an issue. It wasn't that it changed or I changed. It just, you know. And I just think that if you're too strict, I mean, you know, then you've got those kids who are going to, if they're going to do it, they're going to find some place to do it. I still think at least make it safer for them.
Sid Vicious throwing her keggers.
Yeah, I was traumatized by that. I'm sitting there holding my baby, just hoping that everything would be all right, trying to protect my child.
While Sydney's doing a keg stand down in the basement.
Oh, Sid.
That's great.
Sid Vicious.
Yeah. Well, that's going to bring us to...
Legal Briefs. You could have joined in there on that.
I just like listening to you guys do it. It's good.
So Legal Briefs is the part of the show where we go over different legal terms that we talked about. And today, I guess, Mary, you get to participate in it as well.
Absolutely. No reason why she shouldn't fumble around like I do.
All right. I'm good at that.
So explain to me what a Dram Shop Act is.
Okay. That means that you are responsible if you are a bar owner, establishment owner, and somebody comes into your place, you are responsible if you serve them too much, if they're drunk, and you give them stuff if something bad happens. Is that right? Something like
that? That's right. And how can you compare and contrast that with a social host?
Well, a social host doesn't serve or doesn't sell you the things. They just provide the alcohol, so it comes under a civil liability than it does under a criminal one.
Yep. Well... Yeah, but I mean, a Dram Shop Act would be civil as well. So.
Oh, okay.
Now, if it is a Dram Shop Act, I mentioned the strict liability for that. What is strict liability?
It means you don't have to prove that they were negligent. It's the fact that you did it automatically proves that you're liable.
That's correct. That's 100%
ding,
straight
ding,
on.
Ding, 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 ding. I like that.
What a team. High five.
Good job.
So here's one, and you had to know this was coming if you were paying attention because I talked about it, kind of set it up.
I rarely pay attention.
I said that basically if you supply alcohol to minors, that's going to be considered a misdemeanor. So what are the hallmarks of a misdemeanor with regards to, like, say, punishment as opposed to a felony?
You can have a lot of them. Like, you trade 10 misdemeanors equal one felony. Isn't that it?
That's not our answer, Your Honor.
Damn it. What was it then?
It is... usually less than a year in prison, and it often accompanies a fine or you pay a fine instead of going to prison or something like that. They're a minor offense.
That's right. And a felony is going to be for more than a year in prison is the maximum punishment.
Yeah, they might send you the state pen, man, and you do hard time cracking rocks.
Well, that was hard stuff. I wasn't listening to the hard stuff. Legal briefs is hard.
I have a trained ear for doing these things and a legal mind.
And if you go to the state pen, then you end up drinking that prison wine that they make in bags and toilets.
In toilets, yeah.
I've heard that before. I've heard you all say
prison
that
wine
before.
Leads to prison sex. It's not a good scene.
That has to be edited out, right? Please tell me if you're editing that out.
I meant the song by Tool.
There you go. Well, Mary, thanks for coming on the show. That's going to do it for Legal Briefs.
Yeah, Thank you. Thank you guys for letting me. It was fun.
Yeah, it was fun.
And informative.
Thanks for being an expert witness with regards to Cameron Hughes wines.
Hey, I will gladly be an expert witness
on
any
tasting.
She's
going to continue to witness and testify with the remaining bottles.
If you're listening, I just want you to know that I am going to be working for you diligently. I will be tasting and testing and spreading the good word.
Now, one other reason Mary's on here, coincidentally, is that we also want to plug our new podcast that we
have. That's right. You guys just started a new podcast.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. We did. I forgot about that.
By the time we release this, we'll have two episodes up of our new podcast, and it's called Still Waiting for Guffman.
An amateur's perspective on 25 years of community theater.
By Mary and Tommy Smurl.
Yeah. So, and we have a lot of fun. We talk about shows we've done, shows we've been in.
Interesting aspects of theater.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, I'm not a theater guy, per se. I was involved in a fourth grade production of Lafcadio, The Lion, one time.
You received rave reviews.
It did. I was.
Were you the lead role?
No, I was not the lead role. I was Hunter number two, and I wore a pith helmet. I don't think I had any lines. I fell down on stage, actually.
Any lions?
On purpose?
No, but I played it off like I did. So
covers.
Yeah, so the reviews were pretty stellar about that.
So you were working on the physical comedy aspect.
Yes, yeah, I was definitely a Chevy Chase kind of actor. But that being said, even though I'm not into theater, I still listen to the podcast. I really enjoyed it. It was very interesting to hear you all talk about it. And I've always come to all the shows, and I know you guys work so hard on them, so it's kind of cool to hear about the backstage stuff that goes on that, I really don't know about. So,
well, thanks. We appreciate it. And anybody who listens Quarter Pointed, I know it's a completely different topic. It may not be your cup of tea, but if it is, give us a try. Still Waiting for Guffman on iTunes.
Yeah, we're on iTunes. Check us out.
Yeah. And if you haven't rated us Quarter Pointed on iTunes or given us a review, we'd sure appreciate it.
Yeah, especially if it's a good one. If it's a bad one, don't waste your time. You got better things to do.
Well, that's going to do it for this episode of Quarter Pointed.
So thanks for coming, Mayor.
Thanks for having me, guys.
See you at home.
Thanks to everybody for listening, and thanks to MCRB for use of their song, Doctor, Lawyer, Indian Chief.
And thanks to the McElroy Stable of Podcasts for the use of their recording studio. Their podcasts include Mabim Bam, Sawbones, and Still Buffering, as well as many other fine offerings. And please, take the time to rate and review us on iTunes, especially if you liked us. If you didn't, well, then not so much.
You're not supposed to say that.
You always edit that out, though, right?
Usually.
Good.
This has been Court Appointed. I'm Mike Meadows, your co-host. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I'm just a dude.
Thanks for listening.